The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Last week, we left off with a list of pretty wonderful new inventions that are coming out. And this one is capturing clean water from fog. When industrial engineer Abel Cruz was a boy, his weekly chore was to scramble down a ravine in the foothills of the Peruvian Andes to fetch the family's water from a spring. It was downhill from the house, far away and steep, he says. Cruz began dreaming of a better way to collect water. He noticed that subtropical plants, for instance, capture rain and mist with their wide leaves. Eventually, he struck upon the idea of a fog net, a concept that he would go on to refine and share around the world. Each vertical net is a 215 square feet of synthetic resin mesh. Micro droplets of water condense and then dribble down into collection tanks. One net can collect 50 to 100 gallons per day. Locals can fetch water in buckets for their small farms. Working in Lima, Peru, with support from the Creating Water Foundation, Cruz has installed more than 3,600 nets on the bare hillsides around the city to capture fog drifting in from the Pacific Ocean. This should help bring relief to the city of more than 9 million, which tends to have little rainfall and suffers from frequent water shortages. The planet has less and less fresh water, Cruz points out, because the glaciers that are natural reservoirs are disappearing. So we must find a way to accumulate and save water for times of drought. That's kind of cool. An infection-detecting bandage. Dacia Taylor was just 17 in 2021 when she put her inventive mind to solving a common medical complication. Globally, infection after surgery happens in about 1 in 10 patients, according to the World Health Organization. It can be especially hazardous after cesarean sections. Working with her high school chemistry teacher in Iowa City, Iowa, Taylor designed a suture that changes color when it detects an infection. The way the sutures work is both ingenious and simple. Skin is naturally acidic, with a pH value of 5 or so. If infection develops, the pH levels go up. Taylor discovered that some vegetables change color depending on their acid content. Beets, it turns out, go from bright red to dark purple at a pH of 9. So she dyed suture threads with beet juice. If a wound is infected, the thread goes from red to purple. That means a patient can notify a doctor who can prescribe antibiotics, solving the problem before it flares into a bigger one. Taylor, now a student at the University of Iowa, recently took time off to start the health company Verigate Health, and is waiting approval for her sutures. When I was younger, I remember slicing over my teddy bear and sewing it back up with a needle and thread, she told InventEd, a coalition of educators and researchers. I'm pretty sure I still have that bear. A trash boom to capture ocean-bound plastic. There are as many as 171 trillion pieces of plastic floating around in our oceans. That's not good for any critter up and down the food chain. Most of the trash found its way there from rivers polluted by people in the communities alongside them. While we might not be able to stop garbage from flowing into rivers, we may be able to capture it. That's what German industrial designer Morris Schultz thought when he designed the trash boom. I've actually seen this in action. A floating barrier not unlike a swimming lane marker. It stretches across the width of a river and acts as a net, blocking discarded bottles and bags before they can drift off out to sea, while letting fish swim underneath. So far, the simple device is primarily used in Indonesia and India, where it has stopped around 2 million pounds of garbage from entering the ocean since April 2021. Other people and organizations are now applying this open-source technique. The instructions for making the inexpensive trash boom are available online. Sungai Watch, an environmental group in Bali, for example, is employing booms, while a company called Pangea Movement has organized river cleanups in 11 countries so far and hopes to tackle 100 of the most famous of the most polluted rivers. Farming and office towers. Out of lettuce? No worries. Just run out to the office for a head. Seriously, in a growing number of downtowns, you can do just that. As people ought to work from home, leaving office space vacant, some of the empty buildings are being converted into indoor vertical farms. In this new style of farming, instead of planting acres of farmland horizontally, crops are stacked and grown on top of each other. Most of the farms are hydroponics, a soil-free technique that uses mist plants from their roots. A sensor-equipped AI-enabled system dims or brightens energy-efficient LED grow lights as needed, letting growers know when to add more nutrients to their crops. The benefits are many. The plants don't suffer from some of the problems nature can cause, such as drought or floods, nor do they need pesticides because there are no pests. Best of all, these new-style farms can give new life to empty office buildings and vacant downtowns. A number of companies have already entered the field, including Area 2 Farms in Washington, D.C., and Bowery Farm in Kearny, New Jersey. As far more office space opens up, so do more growth opportunities, for example, in Chicago. Farm Zero is in the process of leasing over 3 million square feet of office space, with plans to produce 60 million pounds of vegetables annually. That's an awful lot of lettuce. Rewilding big cities. As any city dweller will tell you, a little green space goes a long way. Having a park around the corner promotes a physical activity and improves air quality. Plus, a tree is a lot nicer to look at than a highway. The people of Madrid, Spain couldn't agree more. The city has become a green space leader after it replaced dirty highways and streets with parks and meadows. It took nearly a decade of construction to complete, but the city's Madrid Rio project tore down a multi-lane highway. Sections of the M30 freeway now run underground through tunnels, allowing people to picnic where cars once whizzed by. A polluted river has been cleaned up, and otters are showing up there for the first time in years. Other waterways have been widened, pine trees have been planted, meadows and beaches have been added. Carmen Munoz, who lives along one of Madrid's many rivers, told a reporter that she no longer wakes to the noise of honking cars, but rather to the sound of birds singing in the trees. She and her neighbors are also breathing a lot less carbon dioxide, over 30,000 metric tons less, according to studies. And the transformation isn't done yet. Leaders are working on plans to encircle the city with a green belt, or as a city council member, Mariana Fuentes, calls it, a 47-mile-long metropolitan forest. A mysterious affair at Greenway. More than 100 people were trapped for several hours last summer in Greenway, the former home of famed British Mr. Writer Agatha Christie, after stormy weather knocked out a tree blocking the road leading to the property. Once news of this broke, some on social media couldn't help but draw a parallel with Christie's iconic "And Then There Were None," which sees 10 strangers invited to a remote mansion and mysteriously killed off one by one. One social media user advised the trapped tourists to implement a buddy system immediately. But the group met a far less grisly fate than Christie's characters, leaving the estate later that evening after a local rescue services reopened the road. Life lesson: the power of 26 letters. My son's split-second decision may have changed a stranger's life. On my son Andrew's 15th birthday, I whisked him to a shoe store near our home in Toronto to get a pair of sandals. We knew exactly the style and size he wanted and arrived right when the store opened. Andrew is non-speaking autistic and prefers shopping when it is not busy. "Size 41 of those black slip-on sandals, please," I told the clerks. Andrew slipped his feet into the shoes with no press or head-banging, sign of distress we have seen in the past. A perfect fit. We boxed them up, paid, and thanked the clerks. It's Andrew's birthday today, 15. "Got our new shoes and now we're off to celebrate with the family," I said. "Happy birthday," they said. "Have fun." But come, next only happens when you act on intuition, when a voice says to stop and do things differently. Instead of having Andrew point to the thank you symbol on his picture chart, I held up his letterboard. For 10 years, Andrew has used a picture chart to communicate. The images represent important and common words, people, places, food, greetings, and activities. Years ago, we discovered that Andrew could communicate more than just his basic needs via a letterboard. An alphabet grid with letters he can point to and spell out words, statements, thoughts. It's a simple but profound tool affixed to the back of his picture chart. And there's a picture of Andrew and his mom. Andrew's a good-looking young man, tall, slender, dark curly hair. Using the letterboard requires significant time and effort for Andrew, but it gives him an opportunity to share far more of who he is than he can convey through picture-to-basis words. So instead of dashing out, I hold up the letterboard and ask Andrew how he'd like to respond. The store clerks are quiet, watching. Andrew points to each letter one by one. "Thank you." I smile and turn to leave. One of the clerks, a man about my age, speaks up. "Can I ask you what it is that..." What are you using there? Because I have a brother-in-law and he doesn't talk. Oh, this is an alphabet board that Andrew uses to communicate, I reply. We practiced it for years. It's quite incredible, as we just didn't know Andrew was so in there. We didn't even know this tool existed. It's relatively uncommon. It's changed everything for us, for our family, for Andrew. This is what happens when we invite others into our humanness, and we allow them to share theirs. Let me give you my contact info as well as the website for the Spell and Communicate organization, I continue. I ask the clerk about his brother-in-law. He tells us that Jason is sturdy and doesn't speak, but he can do a lot for himself. Still, no one really knows him. Maybe there's more, the clerk wonders. Amazing, I say. We've met people, haven't we, Andrew, who started to use this method when they were 50 or 5 or 15. Andrew, what do you think? Andrew starts pointing to letters. Tell Jason, I choke up. Sometimes I forget how powerful the letter board is, how powerful Andrew is. Tell Jason he will change everyone's opinion of him in 26 letters. We were all moved, inspired, and thrilled. Wow, the clerk says, thank you. Andrew smiles. It really does change everything, I say, and we leave. I am floating, and Andrew is singing as he does. This is how it happens, how we impact another person's life in a split second by vulnerability leading to our own. Maybe Jason and the store clerk are reading this. I hope their whole family's life changed because Andrew showed up on his 15th birthday to buy a pair of shoes. Update. After Sue Baker posted this story on love, life, and autism, her Facebook blog, she received numerous inquiries from people about getting started with a letter board for a loved one. Later, she returned to the shoe store and learned that Jason now has a letter board. State of the art. What states are home to the most artists? Maine ranks among the top 10 for working writers and authors, and New Mexico is the top for visual artists such as painters and sculptors. Vermont tops both lists, but the real winner of the creative isn't a state at all. The District of Columbia ranks 6th in visual artists and has double the number of authors per worker than any other state. National interest. Real estate often work alone and scared. My Client, My Predator by Deborah Common. Sarah Goolsey sold auto parts before moving to San Diego and becoming a real estate agent. She didn't have to sit in an office all day and made good income and had the freedom to work on her own schedule, all of which she really enjoyed. But Goolsey also understood it was a very competitive field, as the number of real estate agents across the country had swelled to a record high. So when a homeowner in the nearby town of Oceanside called and said he would consider selling, Goolsey, eager to find a property for her client, agreed to meet him as condominium, alone. As they talked that afternoon in August 2020, the man began inching his chair closer to hers. Then he reached out, groped her thigh, and forcefully kissed her. I kind of blacked out a little, Goolsey 37 recalls. I was trying to be calm and collected, because I was by myself in a stranger's house. The door was maybe 5 foot away, but I had no idea this guy was capable of doing. Across the nation, a majority of real estate agents are women, and are vulnerable to abuse in an industry that offers few protections, demands that they often meet clients alone in empty homes, and encourages them to use their appearance to help bring in buyers. Reports of harassment and occasional physical violence, including rape and even murder, highlight the risks they face. The National Association of Realtors, NAR, a trade organization representing 1.5 million members, reports that 62% of its members are women. Many are attracted to the field in the same reason as Goolsey: flexible schedules, a workplace almost entirely remote, and a licensing process that could complete in a few weeks. But the industry is also structured so that 90% of the agents are not actually employees of the agents they work with. They are independent contractors, which means they are not protected under Title VII, the federal law that prohibits discrimination and sexual harassment in the workplace. It also means that many real estate agents that rely on these agencies for the vast majority of their income do not feel obligated or even inclined to offer them any kind of institutional protection or training. For most of the agents out there, it's up to them to come with salary safety strategies like sharing their location with a family member or friend, insisting on references before meeting a client, or even carrying a firearm for protection. But there's a picture of Rachel DeSalvo, and this is a very attractive young woman. I can see why she would be worried. And so, 6 years after the Me Too movement ignited a global reckoning about sexual harassment and assault, hundreds of thousands of women across the country are working in an industry that resists new measures to protect them. That world is pretty much in the wild, wild west, says Kimberly Perlum, a complex trauma therapist in Towson, Maryland, who has treated several real estate agents who were resultingly assaulted at work. Anybody can call up and say they have money and want a house, including sexual predators. And in a house, you have an unattended space and an inherent power imbalance because the salesperson wants to sell and the buyer knows it. The NAR has been resistant to requiring any sorts of safety training of its members. Classes in Realtor Safety Program, which includes webinars on the best practice for safety, remain optional. One of the group's websites, the program makers, make safety a matter of personal precautions, advising agents to avoid showing houses after dark and always ensure that the properties have a reliable cell phone service. It's hard to force people to take certain classes, says Tracy Kessin, president of the NAR of safety training. Could that become part of what we make mandatory? It could. Have we done it yet? No, we have not. Real estate agents say the solution requires industry to buy in. Some recommend universal background checks for buyers and making mandatory safety trainings a contingency for all brokerages, memberships, and trade organizations. Others suggest that female agents have an option to ask for an escort when client meetings feel unsafe, and that their brokerage is covering the cost. Godosi began carrying a taser gun after her encounter. She filed a police report but declined to press charges against her aggressor. "I just wanted it on file," she said, "so it's on record." The incident continues to affect both her mental health and her career. "I feel like I haven't been able to do my job to my full potential like I was before, because I'm scared," she says. Younger agents and those new to the profession are not always aware of the dangers. "I never thought about when I was starting out," says Rachel DeSalvo, 41, who's been selling homes in New York and New Jersey for about 12-plus years, "that I would meet strangers at vacant homes at night." She has faced both sexual harassment while on the job, buyers making innuendos or attempting to grope her, and violence. One seller, angry that she hadn't secured him at a higher price, took out an axe in front of her and proceeded to hack the lawn sign that bore her picture. "I didn't know what to do, so I just tried to keep calm," she said. "He was screaming and yelling in the industry. We call it a mantrum." Surveys by industry groups have found that harassment in the industry is commonplace, with most real estate agents report that they had either personally experienced or witnessed sexual harassment in the workplace. Working with house flippers when homes sit vacant for prolonged periods has also presented DeSalvo with risk. In November 2022, a squatter had claimed to a recently renovated home that she was trying to sell, and after she asked him to leave the property, he began calling her cell phone. The number was on the lawn's for sale sign at all hours, threatening to have her killed. She got the police involved and eventually had him evicted from the property. DeSalvo now has an alarm button on her phone and keeps pepper spray in her car, which she takes into properties whenever she feels uneasy. She always shares her location with friends or family when going to showings, but she is aware of the industry's catch-22. Every time she asks a new client to provide identification before meeting or refuses to set a meeting after dark, she knows they might just opt to go with another agent. "We don't have an HR department," she said. "If someone does harass you and you complain about it, you basically lose the opportunity to make that commission." DeSalvo is an independent contractor currently working with a Keller Williams brokerage in New Jersey. She notifies the brokerage every time she faces an uncomfortable incident. That follows protocol. Keller Williams policies and guidelines encourage employees and agents who believe that they have been harassed in the workplace to promptly report those facts to their franchisee management, says Daryl Frost, company spokesperson, who added that management is also required to investigate. But while DeSalvo has always felt that she receives a sensitive ear, little action, she says, follows. After the squatter threatened her, she was left on her own to coordinate with the police. And at a previous brokerage, she was suggested a male colleague step in to close the deal after she was verbally harassed by the client. But that meant DeSalvo paid the male agent a referral fee out of her own commission. There is no scenario in which the brokerage gets involved unless the police report comes to them directly, she said. In 12 years, I have always been the one problem solving in these scenarios. Real estate agents also know that their physical appearance is linked to their success. One need only watch an episode of Selling Sunset, Netflix reality show following a group of high-earning female agents, to get the connection. The higher the hemlines and the stilettos, it seems the higher the commissions. Real estate agents use headshots to bring in business because they know their physical appearance is part of their brand. It's really a double-edged sword because as a realtor, you have to look good, be nice, and sometimes flirt with everybody to make them trust you. That shouldn't make me a target, said Godosi. But the very nature of their jobs, often meeting strangers to woo them into buying property, exposes real estate agents to danger. Those in the industry are well aware of high-profile murders. One agent was killed showing a $1 million home in 2008 in British Columbia. Another was gunned down in 2021 outside a property she was showing in Florida. In 2021 alone, 25 real estate agents died from violence on the job, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Perhaps no crime has sent more shock to the wave industry than the death of Beverly Carter. Carter had just one more property to show on September day in 2014 before she could go home. It was nearly 6 p.m. and the Arkansas real estate agent called her husband to tell him she would be home for dinner. After getting into her brown Cadillac and driving 30 minutes outside of Little Rock to show home to a stranger, she was never seen alive again. Carter was 50 years old when she was murdered. Her killer, who lured to the isolated property by pretending to be interested by her, kidnapped her, suffocated her, and eventually buried her body in a shallow grave nearby. He later told reporters that he targeted Carter because she was a woman working alone. He was sentenced to life in prison. His wife, who served as an accomplice, received a 30-year sentence. Carter's son, Carl Carter, remembers being woken by the doorbell at 4 a.m. on the Tuesday detectives found his mother's body. She had been missing for 4 days, and a group of her colleagues, knowing that reporters were already camped out to the concrete plant where her body was discovered, came to his home to break the news to him personally. The industry is operating without guardrails, he said. In 2017, he began the Beverly Carter Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to creating more stringent safety measures for real estate agents. The same year, he and his family filed a lawsuit against CREA-like Realtors, the agency for which Beverly had been working as an independent contractor, alleging the firm was aware of the dangers she faced but never offered any training or safeguards to prevent them. That suit was later dismissed because statute of limitations. No comment is needed, said Harold Cry, president of Cry Lakey, in an email when contacted by a reporter about the case. Too much onus is on agents to create their own safety measures, Carl said, when what is needed is industry-wide reform. Rather than put protocols in place that would protect agents in the field, brokerages have been slow to respond to calls for a broader reform, or resistant altogether, he said. I've been told by big-name brokerages, sorry about your mom, but I'm not here to keep people safe. I'm here to make money, Carl said. It's just very much for-profit industry. The NAR has made other training mandatory. In May 2023, after mounting pressure over discriminatory practices against minorities and appraisal bias, the organization announced that their agents must now take regular continuing education classes in fair housing and diversity, equity, and inclusion. The group's webpage offers safety strategy tips like share your schedule with a colleague, assistant, or family member. Check your cell phone battery and signal before heading to an apartment. And never go into attics, crawl spaces, or garages where you could be trapped. The organization conducts an annual survey on safety. In 2023, when agents were asked if they'd been a victim of a crime while on the job, 95% of the respondents said no. While the organization has touted those numbers as a success, Carl views them quite differently. A few percentage points out of 1.5 million Sunday becomes a really different conversation when you realize it means thousands of people have been victimized. Some female agents concerned about their safety are choosing to carry handguns. Tawana Hetzer, 53, began carrying a gun on the job years ago after a friend encouraged her to get tactical training and a concealed weapon carry permit because she works so often alone. And I can see Donna is, there's a picture of Donna here. She's a very attractive woman, and she has a gun on her hip. The advice proved prescient. She was arranging brochures in an open house in the Denver suburbs in August 2013 when she heard a knock at the door. The tall man with a shaved head who stood outside said he was interested in potentially buying the townhouse she was showing. She let him in, and when he asked to see the upstairs, she led him to the primary bedroom. Then he suddenly pulled up his shirt, revealing a 12-inch Nike tucked into his pants. He also reached for a canister of bear spray and doused her in the face. But that way she had her Springfield 9mm gun hidden in an ankle holster beneath her pants leg. She fired one shot, and he fled. He brought a knife to a gunfight, she said. Her attacker was arrested 4 days later and in January 2020 was sentenced to 16 years in prison. Helzer now offers training to other real estate agents, some of which involves tactical skills including headlocks and how to handle a gun during an attack. But carrying a weapon, she acknowledges, is a deeply personal decision. If you don't believe in firearms, it doesn't matter to me. There's no judgment. Just find another way to defend yourself, she said. Nothing worth your life, including a sale. And then we go to a joke. Chef's diss. Certain webs run people the wrong way, and celebrity chef Jamie Oliver had his entire editorial team agree to never use such words in his recipes. Among them, moist, encrusted, gush, rimming, crevice, floppy, stuff, or smeared. And with that, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. Your healthy cooking toolkit. The right kitchen helpers can make it easier to prep delicious, good-for-you meals. Here are the gadgets and gear that CR's pros and top chefs rely on the most. And there's a whole bunch of pictures of different knives and veggies and spoons and cutting boards, and we'll look at them in detail later. Healthy cooking at home generally requires more fresh stuff, vegetables, fruits, proteins, and that means more washing, chopping, preparation, and cleanup. That might explain why many people think that making healthy meals is a tall order. According to a 2023 national survey by the Cleveland Clinic, nearly half of Americans view nutritious food as expensive, and nearly a quarter of us think we don't have time to prepare healthy meals. Doing the job efficiently and getting most from fresh food you buy comes down in large part to the gear. Having the right tools in your kitchen makes the job easier and saves you time and money. On the following pages, we'll walk you through everyday equipment that experts, including CR's own testers, reporters, and food safety pros, use at home. And the first thing they have is a Contact personal blender. You might hesitate to get your full-size blender out of the cupboard to whip up a single smoothie, that heavy base, the giant pitcher, but a smaller version with the to-go cup delivers convenience. Pack the tumbler with greens, frozen fruit, water, or milk, and blend. It can also pinch hit for a food processor when you need to whir a salad dressing or chop nuts. And they have two of them here. One is $165 for the Beast B10, and the other is a Spirit high-powered personal blender at $70. A cutting board collection. According to James E. Rogers, Ph.D., director and acting head of product safety testing at CR, it's time to replace old boards when you practice grooves which attract bacteria, even after cleaning. A move away from plastic is best. Food-grade silicone boards, such as Lifcon silicone cutting board, $35 for two at Amazon, may be safer, but some flexible ones can be floppy and harder to store. Wood or paper composite boards are firmer. Look for ones with non-slip grips, like the Epicura non-slip groove cutting board, $65 for two at surreliable.com. Always use one board for raw meat and another for fruit and veggies. Rimmed baking sheets. A sheet pan meal where you cook, say, chicken, broccoli, and potatoes together is one done to simplify dinner time. The larger the pan, the better, so you can add plenty of vegetables to your protein and still spread the food out for even cooking, says Amy Keating, who leads CR's nutrition and food testing. Our tests found that uncoated pans cook more evenly and last longer. Made in Cookware half sheet pan for $25. and Nordicware Natural Baker's Half Sheep Land for $14. Soda maker. Staying hydrated is a snap when you've got an endless supply of seltzer water. Not to mention that it's easier to cut back on sugary soda when you have something just as delicious to drink. Add flavor if you'd like. Add with the fresh lemons or lime, or a splash of fruit juice such as cranberry or grapefruit in our most recent evaluation. The SodaStream Terry at $100, SodaStream.com, stood out as the best value. An oil spritzer. Turn any cooking oil you prefer into a spray with a refillable non-aerosol bottle. Better still, get a two-pack like the aluminum set from Misto, $20, Amazon.com, and use a spare for your favorite vinegar for a quick, light way to dress any salad. A salad spinner. How many of us have had those? Rather than buying packaged lettuce, try whole lettuce, less likely to be contaminated by bacteria, chopped or torn, then washed in a spinner. And can use a spinner for much more than a salad. It's great for everything from broccoli florets to herbs to chopped leeks. In a recent lab test, the Farberware Pro Salad Spinner at $22 at Walmart.com was the only one to remove all the water from our greens. It also had the largest capacity, holding more than 5.5 cups of a spring mix. A digital food scale. A handy helper for portion control, a scale is also a must if you're serious about baking or if you're working with recipes that list weight rather than volume. Try to limit alcohol. Pour, say, a glass of wine on a zeroed-out scale to make sure you're not overestimating 5 ounces. One option, a Greater Goods digital kitchen scale for $18 from Walmart. A mix of skillets. It's helpful to keep an eye on a few types on hand, says Ellie Krieger, a host on the Food Network. Her cookbook, Hole in One, the Kappa Lifelong Books for $30, covers healthy meals prepared in a single skillet, pan, or pot. Cast iron can go from cooktop to oven, and nonstick skillets at a few sizes will handle anything from eggs to seared salmon. For pans made without PTFE, a composite made from chemicals that may be harmful, choose nonstick ovens with a ceramic interior like those at Wright, which are Tramatoria enameled cast iron skillet, one series for $65, or Caraway ceramic coated nonstick frying pan for $95, or Green Pan Panova in blush ceramic nonstick frying pan for $100. Hardworking countertop appliances. Depending on the type of food you cook frequently, the right countertop appliance can save hands-on time. Mostly roast veggies that cook protein. See the air fryer. Like recipes that call for slow cooking or pressure cooking, a multi-cooker will fit the bill. If you focus on grains, our testing found that a rice cooker is your best bet. And as far as a rice cooker goes, if whole grains are a staple of your diet, this appliance automates anything from basic brown rice to fancy ancient grains to steel-cut oats, and does the job better than a multi-cooker. Even the rice cookers at the bottom of our ratings make rice better than a multi-cooker, says Larry Kufo, CR test engineer. One thing to note, CR's past tests of rice found high levels of arsenic in a variety of them. Our advice is to always rinse your rice before cooking, says Tody Galica, a chemist and CR food safety expert. Instance Desk 8-cup rice cooker for $30. Air fryer. You can roast, bake, or fry, in parentheses, a variety of foods in less time than it takes to oven or a cooktop, with very little fat. Our air fryer is great for quickly cooking a chicken breast and a side of veggies like Brussels sprouts, says CR's home reporter Tanya Christian. Look for a dishwasher-safe basket and be aware that capacity varies. Our top picks, the Dash Tasty Crisp DCAF 20 at $60, has only 1.9 usable quarts, while the Gourma above, which we'll look at, has a measured capacity of 4.3 quarts. And the Gourma GA Digital Air Fryer for $60 scored an 8er. A multi-cooker. If you love soups or other dishes that require long simmering or pressure cooking, dust off the multi-cooker you bought during the 2010s, Instant Pot craze, or consider treating yourself to a new one. They have functions like sautéing, steaming, and rice cooking. Dan Buettner, author of many books on longevity, included The Blue Zone's Kitchen, National Geographic, $32.50, relies on how to cook pre-soaked dried beans. You can freeze some after cooking to have them on hand for later. the Zavor Lux LCD multi-cooker for $160. Knife sharpener. A sharp knife like our top pick, the Heinkel Premier 8 Chef's Knife, $45, twillings.com, is essential when you're chopping veggies every day. But the Unsung Hero, an easy-to-use sharpener that will encourage you to care for the blade. The Chef Shorts Trizar 15XV electric knife sharpener for $180, suitable at suitable.com, is designed to sharpen to a precise 15-degree angle, the sweet spot for most knives. For a cheaper option, there's the Chef's Choice Angle Select Manual Sharper at $60 at chefschoice.com. Under the counter intelligence. Smaller tools can make or break healthy food prep, but many of us keep using worn-out stuff that has lived in a drawer for years. The versatile handheld items here make many kitchen tasks much easier. A bench scraper. Traditionally used for handling dough or scraping bowls and surfaces, this is surprisingly handy for transferring large quantities of chopped ingredients, scooping up and moving garlic, peppers, onions, and so on from a cutting board to a pot as you're making chili, for example. The dishwasher-safe Chef and Pastry Band chopper set of three for $13 at Amazon, nests for easy storage. Apple core. It's the secret to prepping a pile of apples for a pie quickly. One swift move and you've got perfect slices. I've got one of those. They work. The Pepperworks Apple and Pear Slicer for $22 at Amazon has raised handles and a hinged cover for safe storage. Now, mine's not that fancy. Measuring spoons and cups, two sets of each. You won't have to pause to wash up recipe if you have an extra set. Serla table set of six spice measuring spoons for $22 are stainless steel, dishwasher safe, and narrow enough to fit into small jars. Magnets on the handles of OXO's measuring cup set keep the group separate. $23 at OXO.com. Kitchen shears. They make fast work of cutting chives, scallions, and other herbs to instantly enliven a meal. Ellie Kruger of the Food Network even uses them to cut up pizza. Bonus. No need to wash a cutting board after. The Bayham's kitchen scissors for $12 for two. Amazon.com. Were the top pick from our recent evaluation. Microplane zester and lemon press. Another healthy flavor boost? Citrus, says CR's Amy Keating. Zest adds zing. I love it in salad, soups, and extra mare. The OXO Etch Zester for $11 at OXO.com is a good bet. A squeeze of juice at the end of cooking will brighten the flavor of food. A reamer with handles like the KitchenAid Citrus Juice Presser for $25 at Amazon will be easier to use. Stainless steel or ceramic mixing bowls. Given the research we've done around chemicals and plastics, any opportunity I have to avoid plastic in the kitchen I take, says Sanya Mihaid, CR's manager for food safety testing. Her picks for bowls, a lidded steel nesting set from Core Kitchen for $30 at Amazon.com. That makes it easy to store leftovers in the fridge. A set that starts with a 5-quart or bigger bowl to ensure you have the right size for any task, says Paul Hope, a CR home reporter and trained chef. Glass or stainless steel food storage containers. We recently tested a variety of food storage containers and found glass and steel options that kept food very fresh, including a glass set pictured above and the stainless set listed below. But the all 25 products we tested, they have plastic lids, so don't fill the containers to the brim and hand wash the lids. All of the silicone containers we tested leaked. Any easy non-plastic option, mason jars which can store leftovers, fruits, and veggies in the fridge. The Rubbermaid Brilliance 18-piece glass storage set is $79. The Home Array 10-piece stainless steel food storage set is $43. Food storage problem solved? If one garret goes bad, you have to throw over the whole batch? No, but any pieces that have turned give their neighbors a close look for any signs of mold. One bad berry will ruin the entire batch quickly, Soap says. Then wash the remaining produce before using it. Question. Lettuce and greens never seem to last. What's the best way to maximize their shelf life? Wash greens and dry them thoroughly before then throwing them in the fridge. If you don't plan to use them soon, wrap the lettuce leaves in a dry paper towel and place them in a storage container. Excessive moisture is the biggest enemy for most produce, Hope says, and that paper towel provides a place for any leftover moisture to get absorbed. What about avocados? A hack recently made in the rounds in the internet, in which people stored whole avocados in water to make them stay fresh longer. That's a no, says Food and Most Drug Administration, because the water is a breeding ground for foodborne illness. There's no magic trick here. Keep whole avocados on the counter and check every day for ripeness, then transfer them to the fridge. Once an avocado is cut, add acid like lemon juice to the exposed flesh to slow oxidation. What should go in each crisper drawer? In many fridges, you can adjust the humidity of each drawer. You want high humidity for veggies that will wilt, like leafy beans, carrots, greens, leafy greens and carrots, and low humidity for most fruit and veggies with thin skin. They like drier air. And try not to mix items. Pears, for example, give off ethylene gas that makes some produce, like broccoli, spoil faster. And this next is very interesting. The best way to stop a headache. Almost everyone gets them sometimes, but these steps can nip head pain in the bud and even maybe prevent it. Your head hurts. Maybe you were staring at your computer or phone too long, or you skipped breakfast or didn't sleep well, or got stressed fighting traffic. But now that it's here, what can you do to get rid of that headache? And when is it a sign of something more serious? From drugs to natural cures to behavioral therapy, we have more treatments to relieve head pain than ever. And that's more important. And that's important because almost everyone gets headaches, and some of us get them right quite often. In fact, a 2022 Consumer Reports nationally representative survey of 2,185 adults found that 88% of them say they get a headache at least sometimes, and 1 in 5 get them at least once a week. But people often minimize how severe the problem is and don't seek help soon enough, says Tashame Montique, M.D., chief of the headache division at the University of Miami School of Medicine. Here we'll help you figure out what kind of headache you have, might have, how to get relief, and what works when you know it's time to get medical care. And did you know that 18% of women suffer from migraines, but only 7% of men do? 56% of adults in the U.S. get a headache at least once a month. But 20% have at least one headache a week, including 5% who suffer from a headache almost daily. Know your headaches. The first step in dealing with your headaches is knowing what kind you have. That's a bit complicated because headaches come in lots of flavors. The International Headache Society, if there is such a thing, has identified hundreds of types, from common tension headaches and migraines to less common but debilitating cluster headaches to oddballs like the ones that comes after eating an ice cream cone too fast. Knowing the variety is important, but treatment can vary by type as well as by how severe and frequent your headaches are and by what triggers them. Here are the key features of some common severe types of headaches, plus what you can do about them. Tension. Symptoms: mild to moderate pain at the front of your head or around your eyes that spreads as a tightening band. It often starts a few hours after waking and lasts 4 to 6 hours. They're called chronic when you have them 15 days a month or more. Causes: stress, bad sleep, eye strain, overexertion, bad posture, and other causes can activate nerve endings called nocipitors. These send messages via trigeminal nerve, which runs along the lining around your brain to your mouth, neck, ears, eyes, and throat, tensing your scalp and neck. Treatments: over-the-counter acetaminophen, Tylenol or generic, can help, as can OTC non-steroidal anti-flavoring drugs. Said NSAID, like ibuprofen, Advil or generic, or naproxen, Aleve or generic. Beware: taking NSAIDs on high doses for more than 9 days can trigger overuse or rebound headaches. Migraines. Symptoms: moderate to severe pain, usually on one side of the head and sometimes neck, lasting from a few hours to several days, worsened by even mild activity. Omnia called by nausea and auras, seeing stars, zigzags, or flashing lights, which can affect vision, speech, and movement. The final stage can feel like a hangover, achiness, legginess, frogginess, and a stiff neck. The causes: stress, bad sleep, weather changes, strong smells, alcohol, certain foods such as chocolate and cured meats, and exposure to sunlight or bright flashing fluorescent or LED lights. Treatments: acetaminophen or NSAID, and both might help, as might a pill such as Excedrin, which combines acetaminophen, aspirin, and caffeine. For severe migraines, drugs called triptans can maybe be prescribed. Side effects include nausea, drowsiness and dizziness, and frequent use can trigger rebound headaches. Allergy and sinus. Symptoms. A dull pressure, usually on one or both sides of the head and eyes. It's often accompanied by congestion, fever, or sometimes discolored nasal phlegm, and it can last for several days at a time. Congestion causes congestion and inflammation called sinusitis, triggered by a hay fever or other allergy or respiratory infection such as a cold or the flu. Treatments. Try an over-the-counter decongestant containing pseudoephedrine. Pseudoephedrine, either as a standalone drug or in a combination with a pain reliever like ibuprofen, available in pill or liquid form to reduce nasal congestion. You could also consider a nasal spray like Afrin. To avoid nasal irritation and the risk of rebound headaches, don't use a nasal spray for more than 3 days. Cluster headaches. Symptoms. An uncommon but very painful headache, officially called trigeminal autonomic cephalgia, that causes a sharp pain behind one eye or temple. It's often accompanied by congestion, runny nose, watery eyes, and a drooping eyelid. The intense pain typically lasts only a few minutes and comes in waves. There may be daily attacks for a few weeks or months, then none for months or years. Causes. Despite the congestion and runny nose, these are not related to allergies. The cause is unclear, but they appear connected to both the trigeminal nervous system and the hypothalamus, a part of the brain that oversees hormone regulation. Treatments. If this is your first attack, get immediate medical care to rule out a stroke or other serious problem. If it's diagnosed as a cluster headache, you may be given 100% oxygen through a mask. If that doesn't help, possibly triptan. Caffeine withdrawal. Symptoms. Headache pain that comes within 24 hours when you last consumed caffeine. It may be felt on both sides of the head and temples, along with fatigue, nausea, irritability, and depressed mood. Causes. Regular caffeine consumption affects the level of certain chemicals in your brain, including adenosine, dopamine, and adrenaline, in complex ways. Depriving your body of caffeine can upset the chemistry, triggering headaches and other symptoms. Treatments. Consuming a caffeinated beverage or a pill like Excedrin, which contains caffeine, can help. Or you can try an over-the-counter pain reliever such as acetaminophen, ibuprofen, or naproxen. If you're trying to consume less caffeine, it's better to slowly lower your intake than go cold turkey. Why migraines are tough to treat. Researchers now know that migraines are not, as previously thought, a psychological disorder unique to high-strung women, or even a problem of impaired blood flow to the brain. Instead, they are understood as part of a central nervous system disorder that inflames nerve fibers in the blood vessels, lighting the brain's protective outer membrane. Migraines, which tend to run in families, are much more common in women than in men. In fact, migraine is the most common disabling condition among women 50 and under, and shows only back pain among leading causes of disability in all women. Stesta Chame Monteith, MD, chief of the headache division at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. That could be because migraines can be triggered by changes in estrogen levels during menopause, menstruation, or pregnancies, as well as from fluctuating hormone levels caused by birth controls or in vitro fertilization. And as common as headaches are, the actual number of people who have migraines may be much higher, Monteith says, because the condition is sometimes misdiagnosed. Around a third of Americans think they've had a migraine at least once that was not diagnosed, according to November 2022 Nationally Representative Consumer Reports survey of 2,200 adults. That's partly because migraines can be easily confused with tension headaches and especially with sinus headaches. Monteith says people may see the sinus doctor because they have a sinus symptoms, which are common in migraines, she says. And if they experience auras, which can cause blurry vision, spots, or flashes of light, they may go to an eye doctor for guidance, she says. If you experience those symptoms, she recommends seeing your primary care provider or a neurologist. Also, see one of those health care providers if your migraine symptoms are so severe that they interfere with your daily life at work or home, or happen so often that you're reaching over for a count of the pain relievers more than once a week. That doctor might prescribe a triptan, such as sumatriptan, or travertipitan to treat severe attacks. Or if you suffer from frequent migraines, ask your healthcare provider about prescription drugs recommended by the American Academy of Neurology to prevent attacks, such as metoprolol, propranolol, or another beta blocker, topiramate, dipraprovium, sodium, or another anti-epileptic. Alternative treatments. Here are a few common effective non-drug ways to erase or prevent headaches, especially migraines. These could combine with medication or tried on their own. Some, such as biofeedback and medical devices, are less likely to be covered by insurance, says Mia Menon, MD, Chief of Headache Research at NYU Langone Health in New York City. Behavioral therapy. This can mean adopting better sleep habits or exercising more or undergoing relaxation training where you learn to progressively relax your muscles and pace your breathing. Or cognitive behavioral therapy, which involves learning how to identify and change unhelpful responses to stress. Other approaches involve using a thermal biofeedback device to increase blood flow to your fingertips and away from your head, to electromyographic biofeedback, which uses electrodes in your jaw or back to help you learn how to relax those areas. To try it, ask your physician for recommendations of licensed providers in these techniques in your area. Medical devices. A common one of these is called external trigeminal nerve stimulation, or TNS. As at least one trial of this hormone, of this home device, found that they can cut migraine pain by nearly 60%. When you feel a migraine coming on, you place an adhesive electrode to your forehead that stimulates the trigeminal nerve. They can also be used daily to prevent migraines. To try it, see if your insurance will cover it, and if it will, ask your doctor for a prescription. If it's not covered, you can order one directly through a company such as Cephalay, and they'll expect to shell out several hundred dollars. Ooh. Acupuncture. For headache prevention, growing research confirms this is ancient Chinese practice, which involves in tiny needles into the skin at specific points in the body, can modestly reduce the number of both tension headaches and migraines. To try it, find an acupuncturist in your area through the National Certification Commission for Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine at a directory nccaom.org. It may be covered by insurance. If it's not, expect to set upwards of $100 per session. Physical therapy. Some people with migraines experience tight shoulder and neck muscles before an attack. Others have such frequent migraines that those muscles remain tense. For people who have neck pain, physical therapy or to relax or strengthen muscles or to improve posture can help. If you want to try, ask your doctor to recommend a specialist or search for a certified professional of the American Physical Therapy Association website. That's APTA.org. Word of caution. Marijuana. While marijuana is sometimes promoted as a treatment for headaches, especially migraines, there's still not much evidence of its effectiveness against the pain. And some research links the regular use of cannabis to an increase of risk of heart attack, stroke, heart failure, and other health risk. Finally, remember that even medical marijuana is not legal in many places. Note that there is also not much evidence of a marijuana's THC-free cousin, CBD, in treating or preventing headaches. Feeling a headache coming on? Do this. No single treatment works for everyone, but here are a few options to try. First of all, act fast. Whatever approach you take, do it as soon as you feel a headache coming, not after it's had a choice to grab a hold. Number one, take the max dose of an OTC painkiller. Advil, Aleve, or Tylenol, or a generic version often helps, especially if you take it early and at the maximum recommended dose. Important caveat, don't overdo it. High doses increase the risk of side effects, and taking OTC pain relievers more than 9 days a month can actually trigger headaches. Hydrate. Dehydration can trigger migraines and worsen headaches. Try to drink at least 8 8-ounce glasses of water each day, and up to about 12. Go quiet and dark. Lie down in a quiet room with the lights low off to reduce stimulation and help you relax. Use a hot or cold pack. A hot pack or hot bath can help with a lynching headache. An ice pack or ice face mask may ease a migraine. Massage and stretch. For a tension headache, focus on neck and shoulder muscles that might help with a migraine, too, such as massaging your temples and the backs of your neck. Try ginger. Maybe it sounds odd, but several studies suggest that consuming this anti-inflammatory spice, either the root itself or powder form, can ease migraines. Supplements may help. Many dietary supplements are hyped to prevent or treat headaches, especially migraines, but the evidence is skimpy. Here are several supplements that at least some scientific report. Vitamin B2. The American Academy of Neurology and the American Headache Society are impressed with the research for this vitamin, also called riboflavin. One study found that people who take 400 milligrams a day cut the frequency of migraine attacks to 2 per month compared with the placebo. Vitamin D. Migraine sufferers tend to have lower blood levels of this vitamin than others, and supplements might reduce the number of attacks, some research suggests. Zinc. A 2020 study found that zinc supplements cut the number of migraines for up to 2.5 per month. Melatonin. A 2019 review suggested a small dose of this hormone, typically taken for its potential help with sleep, cut migraines in half when taken nightly for 3 to 6 months. Coenzyme Q10. A 2021 review found that this supplement, often called CoQ10, slightly reduced the frequency of migraines but did not make them less severe. Magnesium. Some research suggests that high doses of mineral can cut the frequency of migraines. High doses can be risky, so consider taking this only under the guidance of a health care provider. Well, there's one more small section that I'll hit next week on this same subject, but let's go ahead and close out with all in a day's work. I work with an older woman who would greet me each day with a jubilant, "Good morning, Mrs. C." I urged her to call me by my first name, but she had trouble remembering Diane. "Just think of Diane," I suggested, "you know, like the princess." It worked, sort of. The next day, she greeted me proudly, proclaiming, "Good morning, Grace." Traveling in Costa Rica, we noticed that people often sold water, fruit, meals, and souvenirs from their front yards. One hot day, my husband and I saw a house with tables and chairs set up on the lawn, and we decided to stop for a bit. Beer. We sat down, and when the man came out from his house, we ordered 2 beers. He gave us a strange look, but went back inside and came out with 2 beers. "How much for the beers?" I asked. "I don't sell beer," he said. "I sell tables and chairs." Philip T. Sherman was a mohel, a person who performs a Jewish rite of circumcision, a ceremony called bris. Having performed thousands of them, he knew many people are squeamish while watching. Count Whoopi Goldberg among them. As the New York Times reported, Sherman offered the comedian this advice. "The next time you go to one, do what I do. Close your eyes." He told her quickly, "just kidding." And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. Thanks so much for listening.